Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Back to Group Answers. This is episode 82. My name is Chris Surratt, and I will be your co-host for this episode alongside my wonderful, brilliant co-host, Brian Daniel.
Those are such great words. I appreciate that, Chris. But also wonderful and brilliant.
Yeah, we're getting there. Even more brilliant,
more
wonderful,
so.
And 30. How old are you now, Brian?
37.
37.
Nice. 3 days, 37.
Nice. 3 days ago. So how do you feel? This is really kind of the fast downslope to 40. How do you feel?
I'm ancient. 30 was really hard for me, but 40 is going to be worse. And I'm no longer mid-30s.
Wow.
So. 30's just weird. 30 was just weird for me. But when it hit me, on that, like Chris referred to, the downslope to 40 was right where you
37.
Are.
37. It sounds impossible.
Yeah, no. 30 felt legit to me. Like when I got to 30, I felt like people might listen to what I have to say. Because when you're in your 20s, they're like, you're 20-something. Yeah. You don't know. So when I hit 30, I felt like, okay, now I'm legit. People are going to listen. When I hit 40, I felt like, okay, now I'm old.
Yeah.
So my homiletics, on your way.
My homiletics professor actually told me nobody wants to hear you preach until you're 35. And so at least people may listen now.
My pastor used this quote a few weeks ago. He said, getting old is like frying bacon naked. You know it's going to hurt. You just don't know where.
Yeah, that's all right. That's one of the big surprises about my age, is like not knowing where I'm going to be sore on any given morning, because it's always a surprise. Yeah. It's serendipitous.
You guys are making me feel better about 37. Thank you.
But about the 40s, my experience is the 40s was the best decade. It's been my favorite so far.
40s has been awesome. I'm in better shape than I've ever been in my life. I eat better. I actually sleep better. 40s has been great. So
you guys are encouraging me in the Lord right now.
Man, you have a lot. You got a lot to look forward to, Brandon. Hiltabital.
Here's
common
the
spelling.
Here's the problem: is you've spent your 30s getting in like great shape.
Yeah, I'm already on the downhill. Yeah. 34 was much better.
So you got nothing to look forward to. Yeah.
You
got to
keep brutalizing yourself a couple times a week on the basketball court. That might be one thing you have to revisit.
All right, so it is the new year. We are just starting January, and a great time to think about kind of launching your small group. A lot of you listening may be launching a brand new small group, or you're relaunching your group. Our group, I don't know how you guys are, Brian and Brandon, but our group kind of takes the last few weeks of December off, and then we kind of, at the beginning of January, get together for something less formal, but it feels like we're kind of relaunching our group. Do you feel like that every January?
We don't take that much time off over the holidays because of my travel and other things. You know, we miss so much throughout the year on Wednesday nights that we meet all the way up until the week of Christmas. And, unless I've just got some really poor attendance, we just keep doing it. So we don't really have that. I mean, we don't have that any more than anybody would coming back after the new year. I mean, it feels like a reboot anyway. Even coming back to work, it's like, man, who are you people?
Yeah.
And group life has that feel, certainly, in January. And I think that's good. It's just a natural rhythm of things. But it doesn't necessarily feel like a relaunch. It feels like, how would you say it, Brandon, like a reacquaintance maybe?
Sometimes reacquaintance, sometimes fully new group. So our church does the group connect sort of strategy, to where you can opt in, opt out of a group every season. And we actually take most of December and all of January off. It's a big break, and we relaunch.
How many people take all of January off, Chris?
I don't know. I mean, I think that's fairly common. It's getting more common with the Group Connect strategy. I mean, that's kind of how our church does it, but our group is continuing on. What we do a lot of times in January and September is we'll maybe add a couple to our group, or kind of open it up if there's anybody who might want to come to our group. So we'll have new people, even though we kind of have an existing group, have some new people. So that feels new conversations. But what I want to talk about today, and what we want to discuss, is how do you successfully launch a new group or even relaunch a group. So if you've had a group, you're adding some new people, there's some things that you should do and there's some things that you shouldn't do. So that's kind of, we're going to follow a post that our own Brian Daniel wrote last year. It's gotten a lot of traction. I think it was number one on the blog for a few weeks, actually. It got a lot of hits.
Yeah, thanks for not getting me a t-shirt for that.
Well, it's not quite like being in the top 100 of Christian podcasts like we are.
Hey, did we talk about that?
I don't know, but we should.
Surely we did. I mean, we got the whole garage to the mountaintop kind of thing going on.
Yeah, well, this was kind of your garage to the mountaintop when it comes to blog posts.
Thanks.
So you wrote one called Don't Do These Six Things. They always talk about don't have a negative title, and you had a negative title.
Well, we really wrestled with that.
You showed them.
Chris Martin.
The marketing team.
Chris Martin does not know what he's talking about. But you did number your list. Don't do these six things when starting a new small group. And actually, it's positive, but I love the way you kind of twisted it around and said don't do these six things. So let's talk through this because I think these are great points for everyone if you're starting a group or if you're relaunching your group. So the first point that you make is don't assume everyone you ask will show up.
Yeah. So, you know, we've talked on the show, you and I have talked about it, and Brandon, you've probably been around for some of these conversations too, you know, that optimal group number. You know, you don't want 40 people. You don't want four necessarily. Right. I mean, you'll take it, but ideally you want to be somewhere in that range. I like 8 to 16 and 12 is good. I think Chris, you guys are 12 a lot of times, right?
Yeah, David Francis, I love the way he says it. He says 12 plus 4 minus 4.
So, you know, I did some homework. I already had some people that I knew I wanted to invite and felt pretty good about it. And knowing that I wanted to hit that number right on the nose, I invited like 12 people. And so, you know, and I expected all 12 to show up, and that just didn't happen.
It doesn't happen. I always encourage group leaders, invite at least 4 to 5 more people than you think you can comfortably hold. So if your house, you kind of look at your living room, which is where you spend most of your time for your group, and you want a setting that everyone can see each other. So you want to be able to set up chairs, you know, your couch, where everybody can kind of comfortably sit in at least a semicircle. You know, if you're doing like a DVD-based curriculum, you want to be able to see the TV, but you also want to be able to see each other when you talk. So if you can comfortably sit, let's say, you know, 12 to 14 people, invite about 18 to 20 people because that's just what you're going to see. Not everybody's going to show up. They might even tell you they're going to show up,
right?
But they're not always going to show up. Have you seen this, Brandon?
I want to echo, yeah, for sure. I want to echo the plus four concept because if we go beyond that, then you actually sort of condition people not to show up. This has been my last semester of my group, so I have failed in this, and I am confessing it now, but we had roughly 30, 32 people on our list to start this last semester, and 25 of them sort of stuck. And so it felt like we had a different small group every week because nobody felt like they had to be there because there was so many people. So we would have 8 to 12 every week. And it'd be a different 8 to 12. And so it took forever for there to feel any relational connection, any continuity. And guys, I love you if you're listening and you're in my community group. But it just, the group was so large, it made it easy to disappear.
Yeah, that's true. When you get kind of above that 12 number, and it's also a tougher conversation because if you're sitting in the room and you've got, you know, 16 people. One week we had 18 people and our living room is not large. People just kind of disappear in the conversation. So they're not going to talk. The loud ones are going to get the talking. And so it's hard to have a conversation. And you're right. There's less obligation to show up every week.
And there's upside and downside to the fact that you only launch once. So you got to get this right. You get one, you know, whatever night of the week it is, you get one night to launch that. And that's who you are. Mm-hmm. If you launch and 6 people show up, my experience is it becomes a lot harder to grow that 6-person group than if you don't do the work on the front end and really think it through and get that invitation list right.
Yeah, you want to invite more. It's harder for a group to get traction if it's less, really less than 8 because if you have, let's say you're a couples group and you have a couple of couples that don't show up, suddenly you're down to like two couples, and that's more let's go out to eat and sit around a table instead of have a group discussion. So you want to invite a lot more people than you think you can hold in your house, because it's going to help your group launch better. So that's the first point, is don't assume everyone you ask will show up, and don't be hurt by it. It's just life. That's the way it works. People's schedules get in the way, or they made New Year's resolutions to join a group, and you know how those go. So don't assume everybody will show up. The number two one is also good. Don't take the Bible study portion of the experience lightly. And I've been guilty of this before. So Brian, talk a little bit about what you meant there.
Well, when you're launching a group, just like we were talking about, with just the invitation, the night of the week, the time, you know, getting all your structure right, getting buy-in from leadership and all the things that your church may require about launching a group. I think the logistics, because you really want people to show up. I mean, that's as I've done this a few times, you know, my mind is, okay, you know, people are going to come to the house. And it's almost like you don't take what you're going to do, which arguably, maybe not arguably, is the most important thing that's going to happen that night. Or I'll just make it personal, I have been at times more flippant about this than what I should have. And so in the blog post, it's been the last few years, you know, I knew what study I wanted to do. So good, right? I mean, that was intentional. I made the decision early in the process, and we put that in all the the promotional material that went out and all the emails. But I realized later that it's more what I wanted to do, and I did not listen to the hearts of the people that I was recruiting, or take time to just maybe have coffee with them or go to lunch with them and really hear their hearts about what their needs are. I just felt like this is already done, and it wasn't a bad study, guys. I mean, it was foundational. You know, there were Bible study elements. It was in Scripture. There was a topical element. You know, it kind of lays the groundwork for disciple making and your own discipleship. It was a good study to begin or to launch a group with. It just, I don't think I did the best job on just vetting it and then taking that measure to let people know that I was listening to them with this decision. And so there's a fine line there between listening to other people, but also I think deploying good leadership and being, you know, and making a decision, it shows people that, you know, that you've got a plan. So that's the background there.
So in picking that study, did you put it up for like a vote, or did you just kind of get a feel for your group and what their needs were and then decided what the study would
be? I chose it about 2 years before the group launched. I mean, I remember when we were working on it, I remember thinking this would be a great study to begin a group with, and it just got tracked.
Yeah. Because I think sometimes we can get too democratic with this. I've had group leaders say so.
That's the other extreme.
Yeah. Do I just put it up for a vote with our group? And honestly, your group doesn't know, especially if it's a brand new group. They're not going to know what a good study is. They're probably going to have a lot of opinions depending on what their felt needs are at the time. So I do think that it's good to kind of know what type of group you're going to have, who the people are in the group. And I always suggest your first meeting, don't do a Bible study. Do it informal. We like to go to like a local restaurant around our house or coffee house and just kind of get to know the people. And you'll probably have a couple of studies in mind, like we could go this direction or this direction. And after spending a little bit of time with the people in your group, you'll know maybe this is a good way to go. This study is a good one for us to start with. But putting it up for vote is not always the best way to pick a curriculum.
I want to say that another way to get off track on this and not take the experience of the Bible lightly is to let the conversation drift away from the Bible. So it's not even necessarily you're not taking seriously picking the right thing. It's not, you cannot use it. You can sit together for an hour and you've not really studied the Bible. It's easy for us because my group uses smallgroup.com to do sermon-based Bible study. And
product placement.
Smallgroup.com. And you can talk a lot about the sermon and not a lot about the Bible. You can talk a lot about life and not a lot about the Bible. But we know this, but we have to remember when we're sitting around the chair, sitting around the circle, it's the Bible that is the living and the active thing in the room. It is an alive magic book, and it's transformational, and we have to drive all the way to the text and let it speak. It's so easy to sit around and talk for an hour and really take the mystical changing power of the Bible kind of for granted. I got a friend that I've been in group with for quite a few years who, with the language we use about him, is that he speaks in Bible verses. So even when we're talking about the Bible and he's going to, you know, add something to the conversation, it's really just more Bible. And every time he opens his mouth to join the conversation, it's like there's more life in the room than there was before because he's speaking words that have more weight than anybody else's because they're the Lord. So
that's so good. Yeah, it's easy. You know, if you're doing a sermon-based study, it's easy to talk about the messenger instead of the message.
Yeah.
If you're doing a video-based study, you know, I've been there. If it's a really good teacher, you talk more about their style than you do the text. So that is so key. I think on the flip side, I always advise against just taking the Bible and opening it up to a book and talking about it. Unless, you know, that's something that you can do. You have the time to really put into the prep. And you can guide a Bible study.
Oh man,
it's just I don't do that.
I've seen that go
wrong. I've been in ministry for 25 years. I don't do that. It's always good to have a guide to go along with it, and we use smallgroup.com as well. And it's several scriptures, but it gives you context. It gives you a guide to kind of walk through those scriptures. So we can spend a whole show, and we have actually, Brian, on this topic. But it is important that you're intentional about your Bible study. All right, number three. Is don't be unintentional about when to launch and how much lead time to build in.
Oh, yeah, you can imagine my chagrin. So we, spelled with a CH. this one time when we launched a group, we did several things right. You know, we did the pre-conversations with the family. You know, we didn't take the curriculum choice lightly. There was a need for new groups in the church, and so we were stepped into that, working closely with leadership, and did some good, you know, some good thinking on that kind of thing. And so we launched in the spring, which is not bad in of itself. I think we would all agree that January and September are two good times to launch groups, or August, you know, whatever that is in the fall. So it doesn't mean that everything else is out of play. You just need to be sure that you understand the rhythms of your church, not only, but also the rhythms of like families around the church. And so we had a pretty good first meeting. And then, what we didn't do was look at the calendar and really think through the calendar. So we avoided Easter, you know, even though maybe that's not one to be avoided, but we knew when Easter was and accounted for that. What I didn't account for was a couple of other things like spring break, which was 2 weeks after we launched. And summer sports, spring sports cranking up. We had, you know, some families with some, you know, some people in spring sports. And so had a good meeting, first couple of meetings, and then it was just tough after that because schedules started to come into play. And so you really need to know those busy times. So, you know, summer's probably not the best time to do, you know, so if you're going to launch in the summer, I think you would need to position it in such a way that people knew that this was more of a drop-in kind of thing, and the commitment was light. This was something like that's just going to bridge us from one season to the next. And I think like January and August and September, I think people, you know, you can be a little bit more have expectations in that way. But spring is one of those seasons that you just really need to be mindful of where people are. And so I would say be sure you look at the calendar and be sure you've got the appropriate lead time leading up to your group. You want to look 6 weeks before you launch, but what we didn't do was 6 weeks after we launched. Yeah.
If you're a church leader listening, I mean, you can go a long ways to helping your groups be protected from this on your own. Like my church essentially does everything for us. It's a launch strategy is given to us. We know exactly when on the calendar the recruitment weekend is. We know when launch day is, where all groups are launching at the same time. We have communication that's provided for us, or at least prompted in between sort of the recruitment time and the launch. And they're looking at the calendar on everybody's behalf and scheduling around things. So, you know, you can bring some safety and some guidelines to all your groups at once if you want to think out in advance.
You can, and you can help your group start strong by emphasizing those times, helping the group leaders kind of market their groups through like a campaign. Our church always did an all-church campaign in February and September. And so that gave our groups the opportunity to kind of advertise their groups, be a part of a group connect, and then, you know, build January as a training, you know, that lead time that you need, and then launch your group 1st of February. Same with August. That's your lead time of training and getting ready for your group, then launch in September. A tricky time that a lot of churches launch groups is after Easter. Now, for me, it depends on where Easter lands on the calendar. Sometimes Easter will land early. Like sometimes it'll land in March. And if it lands like the end of March, then you have April, May. So that's a couple of really good months to have some momentum before you hit summer. But if Easter lands, I can't remember where it lands this year, guys. I think it may be...
It's in April.
It's in April.
Third week of April, I think.
If it's late in April, that's a tough time because you kind of launch your group. It takes your group, especially if it's a new one, it takes it probably 3 or 4 weeks to really kind of start to get some momentum, start to gel. And by that time, if you started mid-April, you're at mid-May, people are already planning their vacations. You're going to hit that summer slump that Brian talked about. And you can fight culture, or you can work with culture and, you know, do a different type of group in the summer, or take a break and get together and occasionally for some fun things. But those are generally kind of good times. January, February, August, September, and then wherever Easter lands. If it lands early, you can launch a successful group. So, but just know where you are in the calendar, build in the lead time, and that's important. Number four, this one hurts a little bit because I think I've built my groups on my winsome personality and it's been successful. But I'd love to hear Brian's opinion. It says, don't conclude that your winsome personality will be enough. And I love the fact that he used winsome.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as Hemingway said, there's death in every joke. But, you know, and maybe I did this. I don't know. But what I do know is I think there have been times when I've thought, I'll just gut this through. I'll just push this through based on what I know and, you know, just my position in the church and those things. And even if it works, if you establish yourself as the emotional center of the group, I think that's a good recipe for burnout down the road. You'll get a year or two down the road or less or more, and you'll realize that, you know, everyone is counting on you for everything.
Yeah.
And once that starts, which is in the recruiting and launching process,
right,
it's really hard to turn that tide back.
Right.
So, you know, whether it's the winsome personality or not, the point here is that, you know, you want to be sure that when you're recruiting, you're mindful of the needs of others in the group and you're listening and you are establishing, at the risk of sounding cliche, the right things at the center of the group, which is the gospel, which is Jesus Christ. And, you know, we're in the people business ultimately, so it's those group members and how best to serve them in this way. And so Chris, Brandon, I think it gets, to use your word, Chris, a little tricky, because you do need to use whatever attributes you have to get this off the ground. But I think that you just need to be cautious about how you're setting things up.
Yeah.
Anything that's centered, even something as small as a, you know, 12, 16 person group, anything that's centered on one person has a shelf life, an unsafe one, most likely. Thankfully, I'm probably the 12th most likable person in my group. And I'm the least likable person in my own family of five. And so as a group leader, I know I've got to not just be centered on the gospel. I can't even be centered on my leadership. So I have, there's actually four of us that share various aspects of the group life. And so you're getting multiple people's personality, even in the way that the group is formed and the way the group carries on from a leadership perspective every week.
Yeah, for me, this is about giving ownership of the group over to the group. I have been there where I try to do everything. You know, I host the group. I lead the discussion, you know, my wife and I make all the snacks, you know, it gets it gets tiresome and you're going to burn out as a leader, and you're not releasing your group members to grow in their spiritual life. If they're not finding their spiritual gifts, if they're not owning it. So there's a lot of areas that you can give ownership over in the group. You know, as simple as bringing food, maybe doing the prayer time, handling that, handling fun activities outside of the group, missional opportunities, where is your group going to serve, raising up a secondary leader that can facilitate the conversation, which is key. So I would start thinking from the beginning, what can I give away? What ownership can I give away in my group so that my group can come alongside me and lead the group with me? You're not the only leader in your group.
First, I would say to Brandon's point about him being the 12th most likable person's group really stretches the limits of credibility. I have a hard time. Yeah, I can't believe that.
I lost it on that one.
I think that's...
I don't want you to ask them, but they would confirm.
He's definitely the most likable in this room right now.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So I don't know that where that puts Brian.
I mean, this is a good sample size.
All right, but you guys are not in my group.
But I would say this is probably where this one's probably where you talk the most about what leadership, small group leadership is. And it's about enabling and equipping as much as anything. And so I also have that habit, Chris. And it's, you know, it seems like I'm being a good servant by doing everything, but it's really poor leadership.
Yep. I mean, I do it honestly because it's easier to do it that way.
Yeah, that's right, because it's easier for me to do it than to ask someone or to coach someone about how to do it.
And it's painful, honestly, to sit there and have somebody else facilitate the first time because you can do it better because you've done it, but it's going to be better in the long run if you can coach that person and raise up somebody to do what you should be giving away. All right, so we just got a few more minutes, guys. Number five is don't be flippant about the schedule. I think this is so important. You know, if your group is kind of hit and miss on when you're going to meet, then people are going to drop out of your group. Is that what you've seen, Brian?
Oh, man. This is one of my pet peeves in group leadership. Two things is the schedule and not planning out and not knowing what you're going to do from one series to the next. You know, so like with Brandon, it's pretty easy for their decision-making because it's sermon-based. Right. We are not. And so we make decisions, you know, every 6 to 10 weeks or whatever it is where the turnover is from curriculum as to what we're going to do. So as a rule, I want to have 3 Bible studies planned at any given time. And every week I provide an updated schedule about when we're meeting and when we're off. Because I've been in groups before, and probably you guys have too. Now, this is one of the upsides of a Sunday morning on campus group, because you don't have this question. They meet every week.
Yep. Right.
And if the leader's not there, someone's going to take that person's place. That's going to happen. Small group leadership has this more freelance, which I like. I really like that idea of this more organic. But the downside of it is it's really easy to cancel.
Yep.
And there are reasons to cancel, it seems like, more often, because it's outside the normal rhythms of most church-going people.
Yep.
I'd also say it's important not to be flippant about the schedule of each internal or each individual meeting. I'm a big proponent of the hard stop. People need to know when they're going to get to go home.
Yep.
We are done at 8 o'clock. We may have stopped at 8:01 before, but I'm not entirely sure. I mean, people need to know when bedtime is.
Oh, but that's so hard, dude.
It's hard, but I'm a stickler to it, too. And what I do is at the beginning, the first meeting, we actually do a group covenant or group agreement. And on that agreement is what time we will start and what time we will stop. And I always give the guarantee, especially to, you know, parents with young kids, that, you know, we start at 7, we will be done at 8:30, and we will cut it off. That doesn't mean you have to leave. I would like for you to go home somewhere before 10. That would be nice.
Well before 10.
We've had those groups. But
that's why I don't host.
Yeah. But
I just go to bed. I mean, it works, though.
Oh,
you know, if you go to bed, people leave.
We've had people in our group. I really hope they don't listen to this. But we've had people in our group that we have gone and put on pajamas, come back out, and they're still there.
Just don't come back out. That's your mistake. What message is that sending?
The group lingerers.
All right, that's a whole other episode, the EGRs. But that's all right. Last one. Actually, we have a bonus. Brandon has one he wants to add at the end. But for Brian's masterpiece, number 6 is don't create false expectations early in the group life.
Yeah,
what do you mean?
Yeah, just anecdotally, I will say, because I was – you know, and should be. I was real excited about group starting this group. Real excited. This has been actually more recent. I was like, Karen, you know, we're gonna make a meal. We're gonna have like chili or something, a pot of something every week. People are gonna get here. We're gonna eat. We're gonna have a good time. We're gonna do Bible study. And she said, you just need to be real careful about that, because if you do it early, that will become the expectation, and we might not want to cook every single group time.
Feed us,
so
Brian.
If you are gonna do a meal, rotate it, let other people bring it. But that would be an illustration. And there's probably other things that you guys would have in mind, but you just want to be real. And my counsel would be just do Bible study. Yeah. Let that be the expectation. Yeah. And if you want to add other things to it, then by all means. But early on in group life, just like Brandon was saying, it's just about the Word. It's just about you and the Word and this conversation and what you're going to do about it.
Another example is, I'm not saying don't get out your guitar. I don't want to open that can of worms. I feel like Chris has strong feelings about not getting out the guitar at small group. But I would say don't get it out if you don't think it's going to go well, and if you don't think it's something that could be a consistent feature of the gathering.
Yeah. When I picture a guitar, I just think 70s, sitting around singing. It's not a bad thing. I mean, if you are a gifted worship leader, and I started my groups thinking we were going to have these just deep emotional fall on your face worship times. I was a worship leader, so I did the guitar thing, handed out the lyrics, and every time I would look around the group in the middle of the song and nobody was singing. They were all staring at their lyric sheets.
Now, I would say there's definitely a space for that.
It's probably because I'm a poor worship leader.
Yeah,
is more likely what it was, but people don't sing, and they definitely don't sing in a small group normally. Now, that's okay. Yeah. You can come up with some other things to do. But I think that's important about the expectations. I resonate completely with the meal. We actually stopped doing the full meal because it's just hard to keep that up every week. And I don't think it's expected. You know, you may have a different type of group, but with our group, it's not expected. So don't create false expectations early in the group life. And one more, we've got like 2 minutes. Brandon, what was your
number 7? We've got another podcast coming up on this, and I actually tried to sneak it into point 4, just about not leading alone. Don't start the group with relying on your own leadership and have a team. But I tried to sneak that into point 4, just so that I would not add anything to the closed canon of a Brian Daniel article. And so let's not add a 7th.
Yeah, because they don't happen very often.
No. This thing is done.
I mean, these things germinate for years before they come out on the screen.
What Brandon just did is what we in the business call a tease.
Tease, yeah.
I think it's about 3 weeks. We're gonna give a whole episode to raising up a secondary leader and how you should do that early and often. All right, Brian. So we've talked about a lot of important things, and there's probably one thing as a group leader that you should always do. There's also probably another podcast that refers maybe the one thing.
So Brandon, did you know that we were a part of the Lifeway Leadership Network?
I was aware.
maybe that's not working anymore.
Yeah, I don't think it works anymore.
the one thing is one of the sister shows, and I would like just to let everyone know about this show. Co-host Scott Sanders and Derek Hanna in The One Thing will explore different crucial ministry topics that are relevant to your context. In each episode of The One Thing, you will hear one solid practical tip for gospel-centered ministry. What movie does this remind you of? City Slickers. The One Thing. So if you happen to be a ministry worker or ministry-minded and want to learn from the Australian context, this podcast is for you. Just look up The One Thing on your favorite podcasting app and subscribe today.
Should 37-year-olds know what City Slickers is?
Probably.
Yeah, that's a mess. Yeah,
forgive me.
By this time, I think you're at the age of accountability.
Yeah.
Cinema accountability.
And with that, we'll say good day, mate. Is that good?
Yeah, transition? It was.
Yeah,
that's right.
I like that. All right, so that's going to do it for episode number 82. Hopefully you're having an awesome January, and you're going to have an awesome small group this semester. We're so excited for you. We would love if you would go to iTunes and rate us and give us a nice comment. That helps other people hear about the podcast. We've been getting some great comments lately. So if you would go and do that, we would really appreciate it. And we will see you next time for Group Answers.